WO Radio.
You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Without Radio at RadioAryan.com. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Today's date is the 15th of January 2016. This is a live broadcast, and as always, I'm joined by Mr. Dennis Wise, the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. How are you doing today, this drizzly winter's evening, Dennis?
I couldn't be in a better place, Sven. Great to be here.
Well, that's good to know. I'm pleased to be here as well. My microphone stand collapsed completely before we started, so I've been in a bit of a rush to put that back together again and sort of bodge it together. Hopefully people can hear me okay, and it will hold up for the podcast. People are saying welcome to Dennis from the United States in the chat room. And I'll just to remind people as well that we do have a chat room. You're welcome to join that. If anybody wants to call in tonight, then they should use Skype and send a contact request to radio.aryan, and then you can come talk to us or send us a message or make any suggestions or join in the conversation, whatever you'd like to do. So long as you're not abusing us, obviously. But I doubt whether anyone would want to do that. No one would want to abuse you. Yeah, after last week's episode where you were accused of... Was it sucking up to the Zionists? Lapping up to the Zionists,
yeah.
Crazy. What have you been researching this week, Dennis? What have you been looking into this week?
Well, as always, after I've finished one of these parts, because there's so much effort goes into the research, I tend to take the following week a little bit more lightly. So I've been skimming over one or two things and looking at possibly... Well, at one point, I was possibly thinking about finishing the series because it did end on a point where the previous two episodes had proven the UK and the USA were communist. But then there's so many other little things that I want to put in there. There's obviously, you know, the Rothschilds, where the royal family plays a role in this with owning half the world land. So I decided... You know, at least I think another one or two episodes, at least, if I can put it together, and so, yeah, you know, it's just been a mixture of going over a few things. I was even looking for places, obviously with communism in mind, like places. You know, these countries, I'll never put a statue up of Adolf Hitler, but yeah, I found, you know, Mandela Way, Gagarin Close, and even, you know, one of the stations, subway stations in Germany, named after the communist Luxembourgs and, you know, the people who tried to overthrow the government and in that little bit of a revolution after World War One. So, you know, but I'm skimming over things and just looking into it. And like I said, I took it a bit easy this week. But I'm quite sure, obviously, you know, there's one or two things have happened. You know, the Vatican has come out and paid tribute to David Bowie, the Crowley lover, which is no surprise. So, yeah, interesting to say the least.
Yeah, that's a bit bizarre. You wouldn't have thought that the church would come out supporting David Bowie, but the Pope doesn't really seem to have much to do with promoting church teaching or biblical teaching. I mean, the reason why David Bowie is lauded is because he came out as a homosexual and married a non-white. So he's a race-mixing homosexual. And of course, they love to promote these sorts of people. So that's why the Pope came out talking about him. But one thought that just occurred to me then while you were talking there, Dennis, about bringing the Communism by the Backdoor series to an end. I thought, how about a bit of a positive note and showing the resistance to communism and the people that are waking up? And there's some of these nationalist groups that are rising all across Eastern Europe and how they've thrown off the shackles of communism. And they are the ones that are in that area of Europe are the ones that are now really standing firm against immigration. That's where we're seeing the rise of nationalism.
Well, that's quite possible. Yeah. Certainly they've had the disease and, like you say now, you know, once they've had it, they don't want it again. And fighting for the cause in places where we wouldn't have usually thought they would have done.
Yeah, like they've been inoculated to it. I mean, there's places like Latvia and Lithuania where 20% of the population were just taken away and sent to the gulags, where other populations were moved in. Russian population was moved in to Estonia and Latvia. So and that's just white people that are being moved in from outside, which is, they're still having problems now, accommodating these people, because they have, even though they've got a similar culture, they've still got a different language. They've still got loyalties to their own country. And that's not to say that that's wrong to have loyalties to your own country. I mean, it's quite right to have loyalties to your own country and your own people, but it can cause problems when you're in somebody else's country. So you've still got problems there, let alone with non-whites and blacks being moved into Europe like we're seeing. So, you know, I think they've got experience of this, and that's why they're standing up against it. And maybe that would, maybe that would finish the note on a happier note, because I know some of the research you've been looking into just this week, you've also been looking into the abduction of children and how the elites are involved with that. Just today, they've been talking about Greville Janner. Greville Janner has now died, and because he's died, they are closing the investigation into him. Now, the question is, why was he not taken to court while he was still alive? Because there were 20 allegations against him, and the police have revealed today that there was overwhelming evidence against this Greville Janner. Overwhelming evidence.
Was he a Freemason at all?
Well, of course he was a Freemason. You know? Of course he was. He was, let me just get the name here, the former president of the Board of British Jews. And he stood up and said that we must continue to chase down any of the National Socialists that are still alive. It doesn't matter how old they get, they must be pulled in, arrested, and taken to court. Now, because he got to a certain age, they said, well, we can't take him to court. Then they said, oh, well, he's got some kind of dementia, so we can't take him to court. And yet this pervert, with overwhelming evidence against him, has managed to get away with it now. And they're closing the investigation, and all the child abuse charities are up in arms and saying, look, you know, what's going on here? We need an investigation. Sorry, go on, Dennis.
Well, Hitler said, before they invaded the Soviet Union, he told his generals that this is a war of ideology. This is a different war completely to, say, France or against Britain. This is a war of annihilation that, you know, communists, like the National Socialists, if they had won, would have wiped out communism completely. And when people look at the purge in Europe after World War II, it's covered by the fact that there were supposedly trials, the Jewish looking for these National Socialists, but it's actually communism. And it's still going on today. This is why you're seeing these people aged 85 and over being jailed, or SS men up in court at over 90, because it's this ideology which they want to completely wipe out. And as long as there's any, as long as there's people like me and you around, you know, they're going to be, you know, purging.
Well, we'll try and get the truth out. But I mean, this is a horrific crime that this Jew has been involved in. And the fact is that because he has been an MP, he's also a barrister, and he was the head of the British Board of Jews, then they haven't taken him to court over this. And this is just disgusting depravity that he's been involved in, abusing young boys that have been stolen from their parents anyway and put into care, where then they are abused by people that are supposed to be a part of the establishment. And how can these victims, where do they go? They can't go to the establishment, because it was the establishment itself that tore them from their family's arms, and then it was the establishment that raped them and abused them. So how can they go to the police?
Well, this reminds me very much of the Pi Institution, which the paedophilia thing, which Harriet Harman I'm not quite sure if they brought the law out or they were trying to bring the law out to stop kids from actually accusing people of messing with them. I mean, it was just, to me, it was just a block, another block to stop these things surfacing. But I mean, I'm convinced it goes back to the Talmud, because all these instances of paedophilia and child abuse, and, you know, rampant homosexuality all stem from the belief of the Talmud. And wherever you find it, the Freemasons are in Hollywood, you know, it's the root of this particular evil, I'm convinced.
Well, it is. I mean, that is where it goes back to. We know that the Talmud is a way of getting around all the laws in the Old Testament, and in fact, all the laws there are, all the natural laws there are. And these are quotes from it to do with the subject. From the Talmud, Sanhedrin 54b, a Jew may have sex with a child as long as the child is less than 9 years old. Sanhedrin 54b, 55a. When a man commits sodomy with a boy under 9 years of age, it is not deemed as pederasty. Yevamoth 98a. All Gentile children are animals. And then Sanhedrin 69b. Sexual intercourse with a boy under the age of 8 is lawful, since it isn't fornication. And this is the filth that's in the book, which they claim is a holy book. It's the filth that's in a book that they call Torah, by the same name as the name of the first five books of the Old Testament. So this is really sick that this is printed, and our establishment pay abusance. You know, they give respect to these rabbis. They go paying their respects to the rabbis, going to the Wailing Wall, which incidentally was an old Christian rubbish dump. It's nothing to do with the temple, because the temple was razed to the ground. But our establishment paid these people respects, like they have this authority and this venerable religion, this venerable old religion that they have. And yet this is the filth that's in what they call their holy book. And the rest of it is just ways to get around laws, ways to cheat the Gentiles, ways to rip off the host nation that they're living among, and ways to take over the host nation, ways to infiltrate it and turn the people into slaves. But this has got to be the filthiest and most disgusting part of it, is that it excuses pedophilia. And we see this going on right the way through history. We see children being abducted by Jews. You hear of them doing these hideous rituals with them, these occult rituals where they drain them of blood, they crucify them. And yet people think, well, this is so shocking, that can't be real, that must just be exaggerated. But they were taken to court in the highest courts of the land, not just in one country, all over Europe, in the highest court of the land, and they were found guilty of this. There were witnesses, there was the evidence was there, you know, but there was a blood there, there was a body there, there was a confession there in these cases. And a lot of the children were sainted, and of course now they try and hide that, and they say that they're no longer saints. They try and hide the images of these poor boys that were abducted and abused. There was even a trade in blood. They had a trade in dried blood that they would basically drain from the child when it was on the cross. They would dry the blood out, and then they would traffic it across Europe. And they had a special type of leather pouch which was waxed on the inside, so that they could put this dried blood in it. And they would make these occult potions out of it, curses out of it, all sorts of things out of it. And when they were caught, they would say, we can't do this. Our religion is the Old Testament, and it says that you mustn't drink blood in the Old Testament. But of course, it's not the Old Testament. This is the book this is their holy book, the Talmud, the one that encourages pedophilia, tells them that it's not fornication, and it's fine to do it.
I'm convinced it's the root of the problem. And I suppose, you know, I mean, you look at going back to David Bowie again, like, you know, this agenda of feminizing everybody. And he was a follower of Crowley. And if anybody follows Crowley or the Kabbalah, then you're coming from the Talmud. I mean, he's quoted here as saying, when in Japan, he said, all those little boys are so cute. I just want to take them up into my room. My overriding interest was in the Kabbalah and Crowleyism. You know, and yet, like you mentioned, you know, the Vatican mentioned him, and this week, early on this week, there was a momentum on the media building him up into some kind of demigod, and it's obviously it suited the agenda, because that iconic moment on Top of the Pops when his guitarist put his loving arm around him, like, you know, many of these left wingers look at that iconic moment as, you know, the breakthrough of this half man, half woman singing on mainstream Top of the Pops, 50 million viewers probably at that point, you know, and the root of it all, the root is, as you said, is a Talmud, convinced.
So that was an actual quote of David Bowie talking about Japanese being attracted to them. Well, this is the thing with the homosexuality. Their ideal homosexual partner is a 13, 14-year-old boy, a youth. And, of course, if they can get two youths of that age and corrupt them, then the youth, there's a likelihood of that youth then being homosexual when he's older, because he's been corrupted by them. His first experience has been with them rather than with a girl. This is the danger. And this is why they say that these Catholic priests that were involved, and this is why they call them pedophile priests, because the majority of them are not pedophiles. They're homosexuals. And the ideal homosexual partner is a youth. And they all admit this. And if you can even see the older ones that claim that they're married on the television, and their partner will be as young as they can possibly get away with. This is the way that they are.
Well, I believe the Freemasons didn't help the cause of the Catholic Church, to be honest, with their love for that type of thing. But yeah, I mean, you know, you're right. I mean, I think one of the bishops in the UK was asking, one of the Anglican bishops was asking for an apology from all the other churches about the way that they treated, he was homosexual, by the way. He was asking for an apology on the way they treated people of that ilk previous to all this freedom, what is around today. The world's just going crazy for me. I mean, I didn't mind the odd record of David Bowie, but, you know, if a daughter of mine brought him home, I'd have kicked him straight back through the door.
Now, the thing is, I don't think we do, you know, we don't like to think that there's this pedophilia that is going on with the people that are supposed to be the establishment and above us. We don't like to think of it. And this is why, this is why they've managed to get away with it for so long, because we just don't like to believe it. We don't want to believe it because it's so horrific.
Every man in the street finds that difficult to believe. I mean, the thought of a group of highly respected leaders of the countries of religion around a table, you know, about to drink the adrenaline in the blood of a child, you know, is beyond most people's thoughts. But obviously, there is another side to this planet, and evil knows no depths.
Oh yeah, what you're referring to there is drinking the blood to get the adrenaline from it, and these occult rituals that goes back to these Jewish rituals. Correct. And that Aleister Crowley promoted, and that the people that say they're influenced by Aleister Crowley, that's who they're being influenced by. You know, you've got people involved in the establishment, like Jimmy Savile. Take Jimmy Savile, for instance. Jimmy Savile abused hundreds, possibly thousands of children, used his position of authority to do this. And all children that were vulnerable, that were in hospital, poor kids. And yes, that's just it, Dennis. He must have been vetted, and he would have been followed around by MI6 as well, because he was good friends with the royals. So, And to even get a place in the BBC, you have to be first checked out by the intelligence services to make sure that you're not going to embarrass the BBC. Yeah, you haven't got a hidden embarrassing past. So he would have been followed around by MI6, and they knew what he was doing, but they thought, well, we can't possibly allow this to be made public because of how bad it's going to make the BBC look and how bad it's going to make the royals look. So you could say they must have known about it, and there must have been a reason why they didn't do anything. And that's the only reason I can think of. And you've got the same instance happening here with this Greville Janner. They must have known about it. I mean, he stood up in the Houses of Parliament and said, well, I wasn't involved in this. He didn't offer any proof. There was plenty of proof that he was involved in it. But because he stood up in the Houses of Parliament and said, I had nothing to do with this, all the people cheered because they just said, what? Greville Janner? Don't be silly. A member of parliament wouldn't be involved in anything like that. But when you realize that this Jewish holy book permits this and encourages it, really, you should think, well, is a Jew? Is he a Jew? Yes, he is a Jew. Well, what does it say in the Jews book? Well, it says it's quite fine to abuse children.
Exactly. Yeah, which is why one of the first questions I asked you, was he a Freemason? That is, I'm not talking about the low-level Freemason who has no idea what's going on. I'm talking about the people in the Freemason, the hierarchy, which are well aware of the situation. That's why I immediately asked you that question, if you knew he was one, because all roads lead to Rome, you know what I'm saying?
Well, the Freemasons work hand in hand with the Jews. The Freemasons, or the top echelons of the Freemasons, are just working for the Jews, basically. The lower ones aren't. They don't know anything about it. They're usually made up of pretty good people that want to get help out and think they're doing a good thing. But the ones at the top are thoroughly corrupt. And it's these influences that set off these revolutions, which you go into in your documentaries. But it's also these people that are involved in these pedophile rings and that cover up for them. Because the majority of the police are Freemasons.
Well, exactly. I mean, how can you get a police force which is predominantly Mason investigating a possible paedophile who would be a Freemason, say, and therefore you've got the Brotherhood bond of secrecy. It's no surprise that these people only come to light when they're dead, because this Freemason law of sticking together and the wall of silence is evident throughout all these court cases.
Well, yeah, you've also got Jimmy Savile. Although there's nothing to say that he actually was Jewish, he definitely, his sympathies were with the Jews. He was invited to go over to Israel and speak to the Knesset. He had a star of Jewish star on his hand that he would wear. And he was saying, we need to be more like the Jews. So he obviously knew that this was in the Talmud, because he was saying, we need to be more like the Jews. He worshipped the Jews and not in the way Judeo-Christians do, but he practically worshipped
the Jews. He actually went over and spoke in the Israeli parliament and told the members over there of the government they have forgotten how to be Jewish. Apparently they'd lack some kind of thing in Palestine where they let someone go about the rice or some oil or something, and Jimmy Savile was furious with him and went over there and lectured him several times. So, there's no doubt where his loyalties lay. So again, you tie back, you see all these photographs with him, with Margaret Thatcher shaking hands with Tony Blair, shaking hands with Yorkshire Ripper even, and Frank Bruno, Prince Charles, must have been vetted, must have known of his background, and yet he had carte blanche just to walk in wherever, whatever, whenever time he felt like it. Unbelievable.
And now we've got the next one, Greville Janner. And it's not just with the Jews and with our establishment and our corrupted MPs establishment. There's a Labour 25, there's a list of all these Jews that are involved in it. But it's also with the Muslims. And it's not just with a certain group of the Muslims, it's with all the Muslims. They all have to emulate Muhammad. Muhammad is seen as the ideal man that they have have to behave like, look to for guidance on how they should be. And Muhammad married a child. I think she was 7 years old. And he would do something quite twisted with her in the bath. And I think he was 9 years old when they consummated the marriage. And this is seen as the perfect ideal man for the Muslims. So this is why you have these child marriages that go on out there. This is why you have ISIS taking these children, these child brides. And this is why you have the Muslims in our countries going out and taking our women, taking our girls, our young girls, and turning them into sex slaves. And instead of turning in the other Muslims for doing this, they cover it up. And they protect the other Muslims. When this happened in Rotherham, when the 1,400 girls got raped, there were some Muslims that then stood up and went to the television and said, oh yes, but it wasn't us, but it was their brothers or their cousins or their uncles, because every one of them is related to the others that are there. You don't have a single Muslim Pakistani on his own anywhere in Britain. All of them are here with their family and their extended family. And when you think of the amount that went on there, that was one girl abused for every four Pakistanis there. So that tells you that all of the Pakistani community in Rotherham knew about this, and they all covered it up. And it's the same thing with the Freemasons. When you've got a Freemason pedophile ring, the rest of them all cover it up. And it's the same when you've got the Jews, and you've got the Jew pedophile rings. All the rest of them cover it up. There have been plenty of news reports, and this is of Jewish children being abused by the rabbis in their yeshivas, and they go and try and tell people, and they say, don't tell anyone, don't tell anyone, we've got to cover this up, don't you dare tell the Gentile authorities. And if they do tell the Gentile authorities, that's it, they're shunned forevermore from their community for telling the Gentile authorities about it.
Yeah, well, as far as Islam goes, I haven't researched too much into it. I am aware that Saudi Arabia preach a different type of Islam to the others. And this is where the Sharia law thing comes into it. And again, looking into things this week, looked into the royal family, and who own masses of land on this planet. I think the Queen is by far the biggest landowner. And then along comes, I think it's the Soviet Union, Russia rather, as a state owns their land. But then Saudi Arabia come into the picture. So, and you've got these two allies of Britain and Saudi Arabia, where they've worked together for years now, and Bahrain's thrown into that, and a couple of other places down there, where there is some influence through the UK, which is influenced by Israel. So it all comes into a bit of a circle there. So, you know, you find this is why Saudi Arabia helped fund ISIS, and, you know, ISIS are good for Israel. And Israel, many believe in the UK is good for the UK and America. So it all ties in, you know, the Jewish and that Muslim, certainly that Muslim part of the world is, something that, you know, I'm always aware of.
All tied in with the Jews. And again, with the children, the establishment portray, it depends on who the children are, how they wish to portray them. Because like just last week, we had pictures of the ISIS children, the child army in ISIS, all prepared to go and blow themselves up and saying, look how wicked and evil this child army is. And then this week, they're showing you starving children in Syria and saying, oh, the evil dictator Bashar al-Assad is starving these children. Well, hang on a minute. Aren't they the children that were involved in ISIS just last week? Aren't they the bad guys in this? But no, we're supposed to be feeding them. You know, one of the things that has been happening with this starving thing, that issue that's come out that's been on the news, is in Syria where this is going on, it's actually the rebels that are withholding the food from these kids. Bashar Assad brought them truckloads of food in November. The rebels stole it all, and they've been selling it at high prices. Yet still they're showing you these children, these poor children. The same with the dead boy on the beach. Because of this dead boy on the beach, we've got to allow all these foreigners into our country, and we've got to feed them and clothe them and allow them to rape us. And we're not going to say anything if they do rape us, because it must be our fault. This is the message that's been sent through from Germany. Yeah. Also this week, it's come out that in Sweden, the police covered up at a rock festival this summer, a rock festival for children, or at least 12-year-olds to 16-year-olds. Again, this mass groping sexual molestation went on, and the police covered it all up, never arrested anyone. Yeah, and it was all because the would-be rapists were Muslim. So you've got all this child abuse going on, and it's only one, all these groups are being covered up for. They're covering it up for the establishment. They're covering it up if it's the Jews doing it, and they're covering it up if the Muslims are doing it. And people aren't being told about it when that occurs. So when people's image of the child molester comes to mind, they don't think of the Jew. They don't think of the Muslim. They think of, right, of the middle-aged white man that hasn't got kids. That's the way people's minds work. And it's not the truth. It means that people are lulled into a false sense of security for a start. Our young children should be taught to go nowhere near these Muslims and nowhere near the Jews. And I don't agree with them being taken into care anyway. I think it's better for them to actually stay at home with their parents. You only get one family. That's it. That's the only thing that's really your own is your own family. To take them, you away from that family and wrench you away from the family, put you somewhere else, and then put you at risk of being abused by the very people that stole you, that are supposedly for the reason that they're then going to keep you safe. It's just sickening, absolutely twisted. And this went on in Jersey, but when the National Socialists got to Jersey, they put a stop to it. They said, any of this goes on while we're here, and you'll be hanged in that square. And that was the only time that it stopped in Jersey.
This is an interesting point you've just reminded me of, which was brought up on YouTube this week, where they were saying about the occult and National Socialist Germany. So this guy comes with all these usual repeated lines of that Hitler was an occultist, etc. So at one point I said to him, well, let's just look at the facts. And I mean facts. I'm talking hearsay, because as I proved in Jersey, so the Germans went in there and ripped that place apart to have that Freemason morning at the end of the video to that extent. But anyway, let's look at the facts about this. They say that Hitler had a book of Blavatsky by his bedside. This is one of these lines to use, and that you know, he's influenced by the Thule Society. So my question to him was, okay, answer me these questions. Why is it that nobody ever mentions the Allies and the occult? Because right now, as I'm talking to you and listeners out there, in the offices in New York and in London of the United Nations, and very same offices, is the Lucis Trust. And the Lucis Trust, for those people who may not know, was once called the Lucifer Publishing Company. And in London, as far as I know, New York possibly, but in London for sure, the library there is a complete books on Alice Bailey and Blavatsky, which is only 100 yards around the corner from Parliament itself. So nothing's ever said about this. And in one of the early parts of the Communism by the Back Door, I've got people from the Lucis Trust talking on a radio show and explaining their influence on the UN and other movements of this New World Order. They've called for the New World Order. So that's one aspect. So the second question to him was, can you please tell me how many occult societies and Freemason lodges, I call them temples, they changed the name at one point, I call them temples, Freemason temples, have the Allies ever closed down? That includes France and the UK. I know at one point in America the Freemasons didn't look good because one was murdered, but they kind of sneaked their way back in again at one point. But certainly, you know, let's just say, take for instance in Europe, how many of the Allies ever closed down in the last, say, 100 years? Not one. But then when you look how many Hitler closed down throughout all Europe and in his own town, you know, there's no doubt about it. So now this person is trying to tell me that National Socialist Germany was the occultists, but the facts tell me the complete opposite. As many things in World War II are complete opposite. you know, when they say, for instance, the National Socialist persecuted Catholic priests. No, it wasn't the National Socialists. That was the Bolsheviks. So everything was turned on its head and blamed. So to me, there is no argument. It closed down the occult societies. It closed down the Freemasons and the UK, to me anyway, and the belly of the beast, was never even attempted to close down. In fact, its whole society, elite society, is built on Freemasonry, right at the very top, the royal family. So anybody would like to pick that argument with me, like, you know, I'm quite sure you've no facts at all.
Well, somebody's, Messerschmitt is pointing out in the chat room that Aleister Crowley worked for British intelligence. And while, Winston Churchill, he got the witches groups together to hurl curses at Germany during the war. So he didn't have organized prayer groups. He had witches hurling curses at Germany. And I think Hitler, what he did, he protected Germany from the enemies of the state. And there were enemies of the state that were involved with the Catholics, enemies of the state with the Protestants, correct, and enemies of the state with the Jews. And the denominator there is enemy of the state. They weren't locked up for being Catholic. This is what the media will say today. They'll say, oh, they were locked up just for being Jews. Germany persecuted the Jews just for being Jews. They never mention the crimes that the Jews are involved in. The crimes that they were pointing out. Yeah, all the occultist things. I mean, they shut down the Masonic lodges. I mean, just because he had a book by Blavatsky there, he read a book every night. He would go through a book, well, according to his valet.
Well, I mean, it's all hearsay. I mean, people mentioned an association with Crowley. That was in, I can't remember the title of the book now, but that was in a book, you know, which was just pure fiction.
Probably just trying to smear him. But even if he did have a book like that there, I mean, I've got all sorts of books that I've read. It doesn't mean I subscribe to the ideology in them. It just means I'm trying to learn about that ideology so I can make up my own opinion on it without having to get a received opinion from somebody else. Yeah, you have to make up your opinion on these things. Well, we've got another question here.
I look at the friends because of the disinformation, right, on the internet. Look at the friends and look at their actions. It's that simple.
Oh, yeah, you have to look at the associates. Well, we've got another question from the chat room. This comes from Akuma. He says, how many Russians were killed fighting against Germany, and how many Russians were killed by Stalin? Do you know off the top of your head, rough figures?
Interesting question, that one. Yeah, well, they reckon around 20 million were killed in the war. But how many were killed by Stalin? Interesting question, because Stalin had this policy of no prisoners of war. I didn't believe that Russia had any prisoner of war. He classed them all as traitors. And as it shows in The Greatest Story Never Told, if you were captured or you happened to desert, then your family would be sent to the gulag, your wife and whatever. So consequently, at the end of World War II, When we read all this Allied propaganda of the Soviets liberating these camps, they didn't liberate them at all. What they did was they rounded up all the Soviets, took them back into the Soviet Union and put them in a gulag or put them to death. So, you know, there's quite a few million there, I'm sure, because Stalin's thought was, especially when the Germans were on the retreat throughout the Ukraine, that these people have been tainted now by this culture from the West, which was always going to be superior to living in a mud hut in the middle of the Ukraine. So these people are now tainted and can't be trusted, and so now we'll either post them all to the far ends of Siberia or we'll send them to a gulag and they can all die. So that's a great question, that, because the million Stalin would have killed of his own people, especially when they had the blocking units behind the troops, where it was actually safer. It was safer to go forward to fight the Germans with no rifle than it was to turn around and come back and run. So, yeah, great question.
Yeah, because they were all there ready to shoot anyone that turned around. Those executive orders of Stalin, they just gradually got worse and worse, didn't they, for the treatment for the Russian soldiers. I suppose
so much manpower. Yeah, the Soviets had so much manpower that it was just ridiculous, you know what I mean? I mean, the Germans, take for instance the Battle of Kursk, you know, the great tank battle. the Germans killed twice as many Soviets, but couldn't advance because, you know, the amount of bodies killed didn't really matter. The fact was that the Russians were still standing.
Like I say, I think what you'd have to do is try and find the figures for the amount of Russians that were liberated, quote unquote, liberated from the work camps and the prison camps, and then just look at that number. That's how many were killed by Stalin just from the camps alone, let alone how many that were killed by Stalin by the people from behind. So that would give you an idea. And you know, wasn't there more Germans killed after the war than ever died fighting during the war? Is that correct as well?
Well, it didn't stop for a number of years, did it? I mean, you look at Eisenhower's death camps. You know, the millions what were sent back to the Soviet Union, you know, there was from the Balkans and then from, you know, the Cossacks and this treaty, what they had at Yalta, where Churchill and Roosevelt just gave in to all Stalin's demands. So any prisoners were all sent back. The slave labor back in, you know, for many years after the war, back in the Soviet Union of the German soldiers, which were something like, I think there were 7 million prisoners, 7.5 million prisoners altogether. You know, 3 million of them were German. The rest would have been from the Axis powers. And, you know, thousands, just thousands returning, you know, 10 years later.
Yeah, it's very moving in the documentary series that you made when you see the Germans coming back and you see the few that did make it back and you see their families and the emotion on their faces when they see their beloved ones that they never thought they were going to see again. And you think of the horrific things that they went through in those gulags. And then you think today the Germans are not allowed to remember the people that their ancestors that fought in the war. They're not allowed to look on them positively. And you think in Latvia and Lithuania, they're not allowed to have their celebrations honoring their ancestors that bravely fought against the Soviets. In Latvia, they're not allowed to make it a bank holiday. It can't be a public holiday on the day when they remember the legionaries that fought against the Soviets so that vast numbers of their people could get out of the country, could escape from the country before the Soviets got there. You've got members of the parliament there that will go to this memorial event, but they're just not allowed to have it as a public holiday because the EU will not allow them to have it as a holiday. And you still got, this is one of the negative things that Putin is involved in. Putin sponsors I forget what the name of it is, World Without Nazism, this anti-fascist group that's run by Jews, and they always go there and try to disrupt proceedings as well. People, they never fought against the Allies. They never fought against the Allies. They only fought against the advancing Soviets, and they're still not allowed to honor them. So go on, Dennis.
Well, I was just going to say about the documentary. I think why the documentary is so poignant is the fact that of all the documentaries I've ever watched before, and probably you'll back me up on this as well, you know, there's never been any emotion shown to the sufferings of what the Germans went through. And so, consequently, when this documentary actually shows the immense suffering of what these soldiers of Germany and the Axis countries went through during and after the war, it obviously it can't be denied. It's a fact. The documentary plainly shows that, and this, I think, it moves a lot of people because for the first time ever, we're seeing, you know, these horrors inflicted on a nation just trying to survive and just wanting to be left alone, and that possibly is one of the big points about that documentary, because I've never known any documentary have any kind of feeling whatsoever towards the Germans other than just hatred.
Well, I think we're suffering as European people. We're still suffering from this huge wound where millions of our people were massacred and where we fought our brothers like that. You imagine, you know, killing your brother. You would still be suffering from that wound, even if you were lying about it and saying, well, they were the ones that tried to kill me. You would still be suffering from that psychological wounding. The whole of Europe is still suffering from that. And yet we've got these Jews claiming that they're the ones that suffered, and suffering even goes through their DNA into their Holocaust victims' grandchildren. They should be receiving reparations as well. It's just absolutely ludicrous. Dennis, I'm getting some interruption on the Skype line from you, so I'm going to call you back. All right. Hello. No, still got this distortion there. I'm not sure what the problem is. It's never kept going like this before. It's always stopped after a while. They're suggesting that I stay on the line for a while. Well, there was another question here, or a suggestion, actually. There was a suggestion in the chat room. Would you consider making a documentary on the extraordinary deeds in World War II of German soldiers and pilots like Rudel, Wittmann, Marseille, or Hartmann? And are you aware of them?
I'm not too sure. You see, I get asked to make a lot of documentaries on various subjects, because there are a lot of subjects, you know, little individual subjects, and it's difficult to promise anything. I'll look into it, but there's so many others asking me to do certain things that it can be a bit of, if I say yes, then it's going to come back at me. So I'll look into it anyway.
Well, the line's quietened down now anyway. Now we gave it a chance. Perhaps it was just something to do with the wire or something like that. You gave up on thinking of cutting the documentary series down into a movie version. Is there anything else that you've been looking at doing with it at all?
Well, you know, I was looking into the possibility at one point, you know, because obviously there's a lot of text, you know, so it's all laid out for someone to actually narrate it, because it's all written down. It just saves people from reading if somebody did, but I don't know how well that would work, because you know, the old cliche, if it isn't broke don't fix it, may come into it. So, but who knows, you know, I mean, like I said, the documentary is the only one out there which is showing the side of what happened to the Germans. People, obviously, some people call it propaganda, but when you're showing what happened to the Germans for the very first time, and it's so brutal and it's so horrible that these people don't really want this to be a story to be told anyway. So we'll see.
Well, I say that's the only thing in it that limits it for some people, is if they're not that good at reading, they wouldn't be able to keep up. So I think that's... Okay. It's a good idea to look into maybe doing that. But there's a lot of text there to try and fit in over the film what's going on with the film.
That's right. That's right.
That's the only problem that I could see with it. But the thing is with it, I mean, everything about our world today goes back to what happened in World War II. And you try and explain this to people, say, well, there's this fantastic documentary on World War II that you should really see. I don't want to know about that. That happened 70 years ago. You say, yes, but the effects from that, that's why everything is the way it is today. That was where they first set the precedent that you wouldn't be able to defend yourself, and that they would just tell you in court what pretty much work out what the outcome of the court case was going to be, and then just set the case up and like a kangaroo court. That was the first time they're actually judging in their own interest, and the first time that they said, "Well, we can tell you what evidence you're allowed to put in and what you aren't," because they withheld all the German evidence.
It was the first time ever that any of the leaders from the opposite side in a war were ever tried.
Oh yeah, that as well. But that precedent of banning evidence, that's been able to be used in every court case since. That's the precedent that was set that allows the family courts to run the way that they do, where the family are not allowed to enter any of their evidence, because that precedent was set, because that was allowed to happen. And they still talk about it today as if, well, it was discovered in the Nuremberg trials that this is what happened. So that's what happened, even though it's a pack of lies.
Yeah, well, it's this kind of thing. Like, if you've got a nice suit and tie and you're in a nice studio on television, reading the news, you know, it's got to be true.
This is it. So, they'll make this fuss today about tortured confessions at Abu Ghraib and that Guantanamo Bay. And I say, well, it's terrible. They were torturing these people. So no, everything they said must be false. They must be able to sue for money. And yet you look at what happened to the Germans. And you look at the fact they said that only Germans could commit war crimes. And it just seems, yeah, even today, they're talking about suing the people that fought in the Iraq War. They've got our soldiers being sued by these Iraqis for apparently mistreating Iraqis in the middle of a war when they're fighting against them. So you've gone from Germany not being able to add any defence whatsoever and us, yep, supposedly victorious allies, and yet just 70 years later, our soldiers are being prosecuted by the people that they're fighting against. So you can see that after defeating the Germans and trying to destroy the Germans for good, these people that did that then turned their sights on the rest of Europe and the rest of the white race.
Which is exactly what's happening.
Well, and that's what you're showing in communism by the back door, isn't it?
I was making last week with the not only the countries well lost World War II were suffering from this huge influx of Africans. It's the countries what supposedly won it.
Well, yeah, this is just it. We didn't win it, did we? I mean, that's quite obvious. Our countries are being flooded.
No, we didn't win it, and it wasn't the ordinary people of the Allied countries, because they were conned to start with.
Yeah, we were all conned. Someone's just saying it in the chat room here. The sad thing about watching the documentary is it where it's in the chronological order. It starts out marvellous, and the more 1945 approaches, the sadder it gets. Encircled by, yeah, the enemies, the rapes of the German women, 1 million conservatively raped by the Bolsheviks. And this is, yeah, it. It just shows you what we could have had and just what Europe used to be like. And I think everybody just looks at that and thinks, well, you know, what have we missed out on? These good old days, you know, you think it was good when you were young, but you look at it back then and see the life that they had. I see all those white faces, like you said last week. Look at the Queen looking out at her, supposedly her people. And she's now got a sea of mud in front of her, mud-coloured faces. Whereas back in 1945, you've got the Londoners dancing around thinking, well, that's it, it's the end of war, we've won. And yet 70 years later, they've all been replaced. 60% of them have been replaced by foreigners who are not even European.
And what is stunning is the silence from Buckingham Palace. They're Freemasons as well. The only thing what comes out of the Buckingham Palace these days is this global warming where they want to depopulate parts of the world.
Well, this is it. They're traitors. We used to have good kings and queens. It used to be a good system, but we allowed it to get taken over.
I'll leave that one up to you. I know what happened to Guy Fawkes.
Well, I'm talking, you know, a thousand years ago and before. I'm talking up to the time when the king would still lead us into battle. The king would be on his horse at the front.
Okay, that's a long time ago.
Only 500 years ago, I think the last king went into battle at the front.
That seems longer to me when I look at the present royal family.
Well, this is just it. They've become corrupted and taken over. We did have a fairly good one that supported Adolf Hitler, but they enticed him away
They got rid of him.
Yeah, enticed him away with a woman and got him to abdicate his throne, saying, well, you can't marry her, she's a commoner. And now look at it, 70 years later, and you've got the king in waiting, marrying what looks to be, to all intents and purposes, a Jewess.
To be honest, you look at the royal structure through history, and it isn't a bastion of morality, is it?
No, not any longer. It did used to be.
Not at all.
Alfred the Great, he was fantastic.
We are going back a bit now, surely.
Yeah, well, I do. I like to look right back into history, even the Celtic kings, the great lawgivers.
For men and not as well, let's be honest.
Well, it really shows you as well.
Genders then.
Well, no, they weren't. They would have thrown them in the bog. But it really shows you how things gradually deteriorate over time. They gradually get worse and worse. That's why Hitler was called the man against time, because he stood against these forces of chaos, this force of decay, this corruption that happens as time goes on and things get worse. And we're all men against time. We're all standing against it. Once you know how things could be, then there's nothing you can do but stand against it. I think sometimes people are frightened to watch your documentary because they know that that's how they'll have to be at the end of it. They want to remain comfortably ignorant, as it were.
Well, as bad as it gets, which the guy in the lady in the chat room, whoever, does point out that it does get worse from when you look at the beginning to the end. As bad as it gets, then that was still a lot better than what it is today. Overall, you know, I mean, there's a lot today. What is it's more subtle. It's done more quietly. Behind the scenes, more courts with no juries, more laws passed at times when people aren't listening. So consequently, we end up in this quagmire of a cesspit.
And it's up to us to pull us out of it. Well, we're getting near the end of the podcast here, Dennis. We're going to have to finish on time. So if you want to let people know where they can find your work or where they can contact you before we sign off.
Yeah, website is Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, and another one is Communism by the Back Door. I mean, YouTube, Dennis Wise channel. I've been reading a book, by the way, if some people might be interested. It's by a guy called John Irwin, who apparently was in an elite squad. And if people, I mean, it's not something that I've ever dwelled down, but I know there are some people interested in this alien side of World War II. If it did exist, then I'm reading a book at the moment called One Step Beyond, which might interest a lot of people out there. But like I said, take it with a pinch of salt.
Okay, we'll check that book out. And thank you very much for listening. We'll see you again next week at 7 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time and 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday.
To Radio Aryan.